what happens with the other.
What I'd like to try to do today is, instead of looking at the Haggadah with broad strokes and themes, is to try and focus on little points. Maybe go straight from Kaddish through Nirtza with little Divrei Torah, Halachos, as we're going through step by step. The Seder is called the Seder because of the rendition that we have, the Kaddish Urchat, listing all the components, all the parts in order of the Seder. And if you notice, not all the mitzvot hayom, not all the mitzvot that we're going to perform on the night of Pesach are necessarily mentioned in the Kaddish Urchat Karpas in the order there. The Arbakosos aren't mentioned. There, it seems it's an order of procedure as things are going to follow, and it doesn't include the mitzvot that are going to be scattered throughout the night. Again, focusing on this idea that the order is very important. So let's start from the beginning. We start with Kaddish. Kaddish is the first of the Dalakosos, and also is the time that we make Kiddush. And the language of Kaddish is interesting. And the Darshanim point out that Kaddish is a language which is used as a command, that a person should be Mekaddish themselves, that a person should make themselves holy, a person should, as an imperative, a person should work themselves to be Mekaddish themselves. And what's interesting when we begin seeing with Kaddish, as it is the first of the Dalakosos, is that the number 4 is going to be very common on the night of the Seder. We have the 4 kosos, the 4 cups of wine. We have the 4 questions, the manishkana. We have the 4 sons. And in reality, we have 4 masos also. We start with 3, but shortly when we get to yachatz, we're going to break the middle masa in half, and we're going to end up with 4 masos. And there are other yamim tovim and other times in the Jewish calendar where there are other numbers that are prominent, but it seems to be that there is a prominence to the number 4 specifically on the night of Pesach. And perhaps the idea behind that is that we have numbers which we know are inherently spiritual numbers. We have 7, we have the one version of the Sviros have 7, as we sometimes say at the end of Sviros Omer, we talk about Chesed, Gvura, and those elements of Hashem's interaction with us. And we have the 10 spheres as well. 10 is also a number which has Kedusha. But perhaps the notion of 4 is referring to really the physical world. We have the 4 directions in the world, and the 4 is the basis. And that's really what the goal is on the Seder night, as we'll see, is that the Yitzhiyah from Mitzrayim, leaving Mitzrayim, represented the birth of Klal Yisrael. We began anew, and now began for the first time as a nation, and that's really the basis for everything. And the idea of reliving, as we'll hopefully see more as throughout the shiur, the idea of incorporating those ideas, of reliving the experience of Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim, part of that is to establish this base for ourselves. And perhaps that's why, as opposed to the spiritual numbers of 10, 7, those aren't the numbers that are prominent, because the way that you establish a strong base, a strong foundation, has to be grounded. It has to be on this world. And that's why the numbers which are going to repeat themselves on the Leil HaSeder is actually the number 4. The language that we use in Kiddush also, which is it's a language not just found on Pesach in particular, but perhaps we can highlight it here, as we refer to the Yontif and we refer to it in Kiddush as Zman Chirusenu. It's the time when we were free. And the language is actually an interesting one, because I would have thought that the language should have said Zman Sheyotzanu L'Chirus in the past tense. It's the time when we went out from Egypt and we became free. Not Zman Chirusenu, which sounds in the present, that we are continuously going out. And we refer to all of our Yomim Tovim in the same way, Zman Simchosenu, Zman Matan Torosenu, and the focus is, which also I think reiterates the point that we just made, which is that the focus of all the Yomim Tovim is not just to remember what happened in the past, but the way Herder Aaron Lichtenstein Shlita once pointed out, that the Jewish calendar isn't a circle, rather it works like a helix. And you're going in a circle, but the goal is that the next time you go around, you're on a higher level than you were the previous year. The same way if you run your finger on a screw, as you run your finger on the circle, you're going in a circle, but you're moving up to a different level. So when you get to the same point the next year, it's not the same Pesach, it's not the same Shavuos, it's not the same Sukkot, it's the same time period, but the purpose of all the Yomim Tovim is for us to gain as much as possible from the Yom Tov and to move ourselves up to the next level. And that's why we refer to, the Kedushas Levi explains, that's why we refer to the Yomim Tovim in the present tense as Man Chirusenu. It's referring to us, it's referring to us going out. And again, this idea, which we'll hopefully elaborate on more, which is that these Yomim Tovim really relate to us on a personal level and are part of our building ourselves each and every year when they come around. And after Kadesh, we move the second step of the Seder is Orchat. And Orchat is a unique halacha. We wash our hands for a davar shetivul abimashkin, for something that's being dipped into a liquid. And this is a halacha, which is a real halacha, which is a chiyuv, for which we are not noheg v'zman hazeh. One was going to eat truma, if the Beis HaMikdash was kayam, one would be required to wash their hands because we assume that a person's hands have a certain level of tuma, they're impure on a certain level just because they interact with the world, and one is required to wash hands before eating something which is dipped in water because the water allows for the food to then be mekabel tuma as well. So you uniquely on the Leil HaSeder, suddenly we become machmir for this halacha of washing for davar shetivul b'mashkin. We're about to dip the karpas into the salt water. We're going to take the vegetable and dip it into the salt water. And because of that, we wash netilas yadayim. So why? Why specifically on the Leil HaSeder are we being extra cautious about this halacha, which either should apply or should not apply the entire year long? There shouldn't be any difference between now and the Leil HaSeder. Between now and the rest of the year. So one possibility is that it's just a chumrah part of the idea of the Seder, perhaps, is that we're trying to be extra meticulous. But perhaps more fundamentally, the idea is one which expresses itself in other places in the Seder as well, which is that we try to do things that are zecher l'mikdash. We try to act in the way that we would if the Beis HaMikdash existed. We have Zecher L'Mikdash Kehillel, when we're going to do Korech later on, so we describe the way that Hillel would have wrapped his Korban Pesach together with the Matzah and the Mar, Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayam, and we recall the Beis HaMikdash on the Leil HaSeder. Similarly, the second night of Pesach, when we begin Sfiras Omer, so we say it after we count the Sfiras Omer, we say, Why? What does the Beis HaMikdash have anything to do with Sfiras Omer? What does it have to do with this time period? So perhaps the idea is that the prominent theme which is going to repeat itself of Zecher L'Mikdash is because the idea of the Geula, the idea of being brought out of Mitzrayim, wasn't just to remove the hardships that we had in Mitzrayim, but it was to move us to the point of being able to be not just be Mekabel the Torah, but eventually to bring us to Eretz Yisrael and to bring us to the Beis HaMikdash. So part of our understanding what Yetzias Mitzrayim was all about is not just to focus on what happened in the past when we actually left Mitzrayim, but to focus on where that was oriented towards. What was the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal was the Beis HaMikdash. So here, when it comes to Urchat, the Talacha, which wouldn't apply, but we want to act, we want to show that our perspective is that we're looking towards the Binyan Beis HaMikdash and the coming of the Mashiach and bringing us back to that reality where we have the Beis HaMikdash. On a halachic level, this Netilas Yadayim is no different than any other Netilas Yadayim except that we don't make a bracha. But meaning, in terms of the halachas of talking after Netilas Yadayim, this would be no different than talking after Netilas Yadayim when it comes to washing for Hamotzi. The only difference would be that you would have to rewash, but you wouldn't make a bracha. Again, because there's no bracha here. But again, once we're trying to fulfill the halacha of washing for something which is being dipped into a liquid, so there's no difference between this Netilas Yadayim and any other Netilas Yadayim that one would do for bread. So that's Orchat. So we have Kadesh, we have Orchat. I think some of the Rebbes point out that it's an interesting order if you look at it outside the realm of the Seder, Kadesh Orchat. We're asking ourselves to Mekadesh ourselves and then washing ourselves clean. You would normally think that we would wash ourselves clean, you would be Metaher yourself before you go ahead and you're being Mekadesh yourself. But perhaps part they explain that part of the special experience that the Leil HaSeder provides is that we don't even have to go through that stage. Hashem gives us the opportunity to jump ahead. First to grab on to begin the mitzvah, to begin being mekadesh ourselves, to make ourselves holy. And then afterward, maybe even through the mitzvah, you have the ability to urchas, you have the ability to wash yourselves clean. That brings us to Karpas. So Karpas, my father every year says the same word, so there aren't too many to say on Karpas, but luckily I do have one that I can say. The question is, why is Karpas right here? It seems to get a very center stage, you know, at the very beginning. We just made Kiddush, and right away we move. Urchas even is to facilitate Karpas. The reason that we're washing is because we're about to do Karpas, we're about to dip into a Dover Shetibul B'mashkin. So why does it come so front and center? So the Gemara in Pesachim explains that when Bnei Yisrael, Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash time, when the Beis HaMikdash existed, when they would shech their Korban Pesach, they would carry their Korban Pesach homes the same way, the way they wrapped the Korban Pesach in order to carry it, was the same way that the Yishmaelim used to carry their things. And it's Kederach HaYishmaelim. And it seems very strange. What do the Yishmaelim have to do with anything? If anything, this isn't the time that I necessarily want to be confused with the Yishmaelim. So why is it specifically that the Gemara would say that the way that you carry the Korban Pesach is to mimic the way that the Yishmaelim did? So Rav Shlomo Kluger explains that throughout the Seder, we're dealing with beginning with the Shiva Mitzrayim, we're dealing with how we, with leaving, where we're going, those Seder, Vitzalti, everything. We have this entire perspective, where are we headed, but we never discuss where did it come from? How did it all begin? How did we end up in Mitzrayim to begin with? So what's the answer? How did we end up in Mitzrayim? The first step to going down to Mitzrayim was the brothers selling Yosef down to Mitzrayim. The brothers sold Yosef to a band of Ishmaelim, and they took Yosef down to Mitzrayim. So the reason that we focus even on the Korban Pesach and to remember and to act in the way of the Ishmaelim is again to remember that this didn't just happen in a vacuum. There was a reason that we ended up down there, and it started with Mechiras Yosef. But what happens when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore? When we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore, certainly the sin of Yosef's brothers seems to have been an example of Sinas Chinam. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. How could we not remember, even after the Beis HaMikdash no longer exists, how could we not do something to remember how we ended up in Mitzrayim? So Rabbeinu Manoach explains that Karpas is, we dip something, we dip the vegetable into the salt water to remind us of the way that Yosef's brothers dipped his coat into the blood. It's a reminder of the Mechiras Yosef to remember how we got down to Mitzrayim. What does Karpas have to do with Yosef's coat? If you look at Rashi, when he explains the Ksonas Pasim, he describes the color of the Ksonas Pasim as Karpas. He quotes the Pasuk in the beginning of Megillas Esther, the Chur Karpas Utecheles. That's how he describes the color of the Ksonas Pasim. And the role of Karpas has to be Act 1, Scene 1. It has to be right at the beginning, because it's establishing for us how we ended up going down to Mitzrayim in the first place. Before we can discuss what happened in Mitzrayim, before we can discuss leaving Mitzrayim, we have to go through and understand that we ended up there because of Mechiras Yosef. After Karpas, we then move to Yachatz. So Yachatz, we break the middle matzah, and we're going to put aside a piece for the Afikomen. And the minhag is to cover the piece that's the Afikomen. Perhaps the kids steal the Afikomen, hide the Afikomen, ransom the Afikomen, blackmail with the Afikomen, whatever it is that they do. Rav Shlomo Zalman, I think in his Agada, he didn't like using the language of stealing. He said, you can never teach your children to steal. So different ways of referring to the same idea. He didn't like the notion of stealing the Afikomen. But it's the same idea. So why is it that we cover the Afikomen? I guess if the kids are going to be around, they probably don't want it to get dirty, to get ruined. But the Gra explains that the reason that we cover the Afikomen is similar to the reason that we cover the Challah on Shabbos. one of the reasons given for the reason for why we cover the challah on Shabbos is because in terms of the order of brachos, so hamotzi is supposed to be the first bracha that's made, and hamotzi precedes hagafen. But because of the halacha that you're not allowed to eat before kiddush, and you're supposed to begin the seuda with kiddush hayom, so we're required to make kiddush before we eat the hamotzi. But on a certain level, the bread is going to be embarrassed that it's being passed over, that we're not making the bracha that's supposed to be made on the bread first. So to prevent the bread from, quote-unquote, seeing what's going on, that we're making the bracha d'agafen, so we cover over the bread. And so too when it comes to the afikomen, in a similar vein. The afikomen, as we'll see perhaps a little later on, is really the central focus of what the Seder is about. The afikomen is a zecher for the korban Pesach. And for the afikomen to be passed over by everything which is happening in the Haggadah beforehand is similar to this idea that the afikomen, we don't want the afikomen to, you know, feel bad, to be embarrassed that it's being passed over, so we cover over the afikomen and we remove it from the table. It's an interesting point. I'm not going to discuss it too much right now, but it's an interesting question, which is that if we want to break the matzah for the afikomen, why don't we just start with the matzah already broken? When it comes time to make hamotzi, we're already going to have a broken matzah, so it has nothing to do with trying to have whole matzahs. So just start the seder with two and a half matzahs and put one in a bag somewhere. Not to elaborate too much now, but perhaps it has to do with the different perspectives on matzah, which we'll discuss a little bit later, which is what exactly does matzah represent, and perhaps this is a way of symbolizing the different aspects of what matzah represents. The main part of the Haggadah is Magid. The Magid is where we have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, one of the mitzvahs halayla of discussing and elaborating on the story of how we made it, of how we left Mitzrayim. And the Mefarshim ask, why don't we make a bracha on Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim? Usually when we come to doing a mitzvah, so before we do the mitzvah, we make a bracha. So how come there's no special bracha that we should say right before we start Magid on the upcoming mitzvah of Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim? So the Nesiva says that for a technical reason. He said that you're not allowed to make a bracha on a bracha. And since incorporated and the culmination of Magid is going to be the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu that we're going to make at the second cup, right at the end of Magid. So since Magid includes a bracha, as a rule, we don't make a bracha on a bracha. So for that technical reason, we don't make a bracha on Magid. The Maharal explains that we only make a bracha when the main component of the mitzvah is the ma'isa mitzvah, it's the action of the mitzvah. But he says when it comes to Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, the goal of the mitzvah of Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim is to affect us internally, is to internalize. It's a mitzvah where the kiyum, where the fulfillment of the mitzvah is really in our hearts. We don't make a bracha on a mitzvah where the fulfillment is in the heart, only when the mitzvah focuses on the ma'isa, on the ma'isa per se. And the Sfat Emes explains that in general, how come we don't make a bracha on a mitzvah ben adam lechaveiro? A person's about to give tzedakah, a person doesn't make a bracha. In general, when it comes to interpersonal mitzvahs, as a rule, we don't make a bracha. So he says the reason is that we don't make a bracha when a mitzvah is intuitive. When it's something which our minds is telling us that it's something you're supposed to do. Somebody needs help. You're doing a chesed for somebody, so you understand that's what you're supposed to be doing. A bracha was instituted only when it's a ma'isa mitzvah, when it's a mitzvah which we would not have known to do otherwise. And he says that's what the Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about also. Having the hakaras hatov, realizing that what Hashem did for us, all of the miracles that took place, what we went through, and how Hashem took us out, and how much He's done for us, the amount of appreciation that we need to show, it's so obvious, and it needs to be so obvious, that it's intuitive, and as such, there's no bracha on a mitzvah which is intuitive, similar to the fact that there's no bracha on a mitzvah ben adam lechaveiro. We read the Manish Tana, and the halacha is that even normally the youngest child or a child at the table or the youngest person or somebody who doesn't know at the table will ask the questions, And the main focus of the Haggadah is for the person who's running the Seder, for the father, to make sure to elaborate and make sure the child understands the answers to the questions that are being asked. But the Gemara says that even if two Talmidei Chachamim are sitting, they need to ask these questions to one another. And the question is why? They know it already. Why do they need to ask these questions to each other? So Rav Shermach explains that sometimes we need to take a step back. Sometimes we need to look from the perspective of a child. A child has a very pure sense of emunah. A child is willing to accept what the parent tells them. And sometimes we try to be a little bit too smart. Sometimes we try to think a little bit too much. And generally speaking, that's fine. But part of what the Le'el HaSeder is about is sometimes is taking a step back. Is taking a step back and looking at things from the perspective of the child, that sometimes with the emunah pshuta, the simple faith in Hashem, the simple realization of what Hashem did for us, that's the perspective that one is supposed to have. And sometimes the more we know about something, the harder it is to get ourselves into that mindset, the harder it is to step back and to think, no, let's try to clear the slate, try to look at it from the perspective of a child, and see how the child would look at it. And the questions are there to the same way that a child asks the questions. Again, the answers are obvious. The person asking the question knows the answers. But the same way the child innocently asks the question, trying to figure out what's going on the night of the Seder, so many things are different. That's part of what we're supposed to try and do on the Le'el HaSeder. But on the other hand, it's a mitzvah laharbos. We're going to say in Avadim Hayinu, Afilu Kulanu Chachamim, Kulanu Nevonim, Kulanu Zikenim, Kulanu Yodim, Et HaTorah, we know all the Torah. Mitzvah Leinu Tzaper V'Tiyas Mitzrayim, V'Chol HaMarvel Tzaper V'Tiyas Mitzrayim, Harei Zeh Meshubach. Perhaps that's the first step. The first step is to realize that we need to sometimes take a step back and realize and look at things from the perspective of a child. But we're not supposed to live that way forever. Part of what we can accomplish by learning the story even more and looking deeply into the story is then, having taken that step back, is being able to then move forward. We don't have to constantly live our lives with that innocent perspective, but it takes a step back and then it allows us to be ma'amik, to deepen our appreciation of the story, and as such, raise the level of our understanding and our emunah, and our emunah b'Hashem. The story is told in the Haggadah of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon. They were all sitting in Bnei Brak, and tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, and they were telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim the entire night, Achavos, Talmidei Avramu Lohem Rabboseinu, the time has come to say Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. There are many questions, many in terms of what they were doing the entire night. Is the mitzvah even apply the entire night? Is the mitzvah only until Chatzos? But what seems to be glaring is that either way you slice it, the mitzvah certainly ends when it comes to Alos HaShachar. As soon as daybreak comes, the mitzvah is no longer applicable. The mitzvah certainly is only a mitzvah which applies to the night, whether it's limited to Chatzos or whether it's the entire night. So that's the machlokas between actually Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva. But even if they were trying to maintain the mitzvah the entire night, Kriya Shema Shel Shachris is not said at, cannot be said at Alos HaShachar. Kriya Shema can only be said at a later moment in time. So if they're no longer being mekayim the mitzvah of Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, so what? Okay, so maybe they went overboard, maybe they went beyond, but why does the Baal HaGadah need to tell us that? Why is that significant to our story to see that their Talmidim came and said that they did it till Kriya Shema? It wasn't even the halacha. There was no Kiyum HaMitzvah. They didn't fulfill anything by doing it for that long. Once Kriya Shema came, it was not the time for the mitzvah, not the time for the mitzvah at all. And Rav Sternbach explains that the idea is that what's the notion of Kriya Shema? The notion of Kriya Shema is to focus on Kabbalah or Machlus Shemayim, as accepting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, accepting God as the King and the yoke, accepting the yoke of heaven. And we know that Rabbi Akiva says that he was constantly bothered how he was ever going to be able to be Mekayim, the Pasuk that Ubechol Nafshecha, to be able to give his entire soul for Hashem until he ended up being killed, being murdered and dying with the words on his mouth. But perhaps the idea that the Talmidim were saying was that they spent the entire night learning the Sibur of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the goal of Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, again, is not just to retell the story, but what we've seen already a few times, is that the goal is to appreciate what is being learned and to be able to internalize that and to be able to use that as a way of strengthening one's emunah b'Hashem. And perhaps when the Talmidim came, when they said, "Higiyaz Makesh Masha Shachris," what they were telling, what they were pointing out, not that technically now is the time that Kriya Shema can be said, but that now you're ready to say Kriya Shema. Once you've gone through an entire night and you've been able to internalize the message of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you've been able to strengthen that emunah b'Hashem, you're prepared. You can say b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol maldecha, that you're willing to give everything, you're willing to sacrifice everything for Hashem. So Higiyaz Man Kriya Shema Shel Shachris, you're ready to be able to say Kriya Shema the way Kriya Shema is supposed to be said. You're to be able to focus the way Kriya Shema is supposed to be able to focus on. But again, not that technically it was that they were just informing them that it was the time to say Kriya Shema. And then we go through the way that the Haggadah is set up. The Gemara tells us is that we say the Haggadah, we're maskil b'genus, u'mesayim b'shvach. We go back to the times of the low points in our history, and from there we move forward, and we say mitzchila ov de avodah zara hayu avoseinu. We go back all the way to the time when our forefathers were ov de avodah zara, back to the time of Terach before Abraham Avinu, that Abraham Avinu came from a house where they were ov de avodah zara. And it's a tremendous lesson that sometimes when we approach Torah and mitzvot, everybody comes with certain baggage. Everybody comes with whatever experiences they've had in the past. Everybody comes, there are people that are Bali Tshuva, there are people that have made tremendous strides in their lives. And sometimes we think that that's holding me back. I can't be mekayim the mitzvah the same way other people can be mekayim the mitzvah. My mitzvah isn't as beloved as somebody else's. But here we say, no, mitzvah of the Avodah Zarah HaVasein. Look back at the history of Klal Yisrael. Look at the Jewish people. On the Leil HaSeder, what are we focusing on? Look where we all came from. We all came from a time when we were of the Avodah Zarah. Afshav kevon ha'makom la'avodaso. But once you move forward, that's a whole different perspective. It's where you are right now. Everything that you've accomplished, everything that you've gained, now you can come in front of Hashem and you can be mekayim the mitzvah the same way anybody else can be mekayim the mitzvah. And we read, Seyumad Mabikesh Lavan Harami Lasok Yaakov Avinu. We say, look at what Lavan tried to do to Yaakov Avinu. Sheparo lo gazar ela zecharm v'lavan bikesh la'akor es hakol. So Paro was only trying to kill the male children, and Lavan tried to uproot everything. Where? What did Lavan do? What was Lavan? Who was Lavan trying to kill? What would it mean that Lavan was bikesh la'akor es hakol? If you look, we just said Behisha Amdal Avoseinu Vavanu in the previous paragraph. Shelo Echa Bilvad Amar Aleinu L'Chaloseinu Ela Shebechol Dor Vador Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloseinu. In every single generation, there are enemies who are trying to see our destruction. And if you look, so this in one of the Haggadahs, I don't remember where, but the language of Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloseinu. It's not just that they plan. It's not just that they make their attempts to try and to shine their shines, but it's Om Demalena Chaloseinu. They're constantly on guard. If they can't be making the plan, they're hoping somebody else is. It's a perspective. There's always somebody out there looking to try and destroy us. And it's Seyumad Ma Bikesh Lavan Harami. We look at what Lavan did. That Lavan and Paro represent the two different ways that they try and destroy Klal Yisrael. There's the trying to destroy Klal Yisrael like Paro did. Paro physically tried to destroy. He had them take the babies and throw them into the water and kill them. But that wasn't the perspective that Lavan had. Lavan wasn't trying to kill anybody. Lavan was trying to attack them spiritually. Lavan was trying to get to make sure that Yaakov Avinu and his family, they wouldn't be able to develop. They wouldn't be able to develop spiritually into Klal Yisrael. And these are different methods. It's Om Demalena Chaloseinu. There are times when there's a persecution which is violent and we're physically being attacked. But there are many times when it comes in a much nicer way. Sometimes even without us realizing that there is a plan, there is a hope. The Chazal is saying that there's a sakana, there's a spiritual danger that exists, and that's the lesson of Lavan Harami. And the Baal HaGadda says that one is even worse. It's Paral Gazar Al Zacharim, when they're trying to physically kill the people, so it can be limited. But Lavan Bikesh La'akor HaSakol, but if they can catch a spiritual, if they can undermine the spiritual nature of the Jewish people, of Klal Yisrael, then it has the potential La'akor HaSakol to uproot everything. And that's the two forms of attacks of Omdim Aleinu L'chalosinu. In every generation it comes in different forms. Sometimes at the same time we'll come in at the same time we'll have both forms attacking us. But that's the lesson. The Paro is the physical destruction of Klal Yisrael, while Lavan was trying to look for the spiritual destruction of Klal Yisrael. The part of the Agada that follows, where we darshan all of the psukim and we explain and we elaborate on everything that's learned out from the psukim, is actually a fundamental part of the Haggadah, and it's part of, and a lot of times the questions and the vort and the Divrei Torah are focused on more on secondary issues, when a lot of the focus in terms of the way Chazal viewed what the goal of the Haggadah is to elaborate. And it's, we say, Arami Ovid, you see, just way from the way the psukim elaborate on it, it's not just reading the psukim, but it's darshaning them, it's understanding, it's looking for the deepness in all these psukim. I don't have enough time to point them out all now, but if you look through the psukim, they're just some drushas, they're just to try and understand where Chazal were coming from, how they saw this. But there is so much more to the Shibud, there's so much more to the Geula, which comes out of learning these psukim, and this is really a major focus of and goal of understanding what the Haggadah is all about. This time at the end, maybe we'll come back to some more Magid, but we're going to try to get through the entire Haggadah. Maybe for now we'll skip ahead. After Magid, we move to Rachza. So it's interesting, I guess not too much to comment on Rachza, Netilas Yadayim, but it is interesting to note that earlier when we watched Netilas Yadayim, it was called Urchat, and now it's called Rachza. So how come they're not both Rachza or Urchat? So Rav Shlomo Zalman pointed out that the reason that Rachza is the normal, we go about washing the Tehillas Yadayim as you normally would, because washing the Tehillas Yadayim for bread, washing the Tehillas Yadayim for matzah is something which we're used to, is something that we normally do. But Urchatz is an imperative, it's saying go wash it, it's a command that you should go wash. Why? Because as we mentioned before, Urchatz is a Tehillas Yadayim that we don't normally do. It's a Tehillas Yadayim for Dover Shetibul B'mashkin. It's a real halacha, but it's not a halacha that we normally practice. So since that's a halacha that we don't normally practice, so it's written in the sense of make sure you go ahead and do it. That's what you need the reminder. But Rachza, so of course you're going to watch the Tehillas Yadayim. Everybody watches the Tehillas Yadayim before they come to Motzi. And perhaps that's why the language changes from Urchatz to Rachza. Then we move to Motzi Matzah, the eating of the matzah. And matzah is unique, as I alluded to earlier, in that it includes a few different themes. On the one hand, in Holach Ma'anya, we say Holach Ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. This was the bread of affliction. This was the bread that they ate in Mitzrayim. But on the other hand, this was what they ate when we left Mitzrayim. It represents the Geula. It represents the fact that we left so in such a hurry, so quickly, that there was no time for the bread to bake properly, to become bread, and it ended up being matzah. So which one is it? What's the matzah supposed to represent? What are we supposed to be thinking of? What are we supposed to remember when we're eating the matzah?
Both things.
Right. Both things, because everything is a progression. And Rav Asher Weiss points out that that's really the focus of what the questions of the Manish Tana are all about. If you look at just generally the way to summarize what the questions of Ma'anish Tana are is the focus of the question is trying to figure out what is tonight. Is tonight a night where we're supposed to be B'nei Chorin, we're supposed to represent the Cheiros, the freedom that we have, or are we supposed to remind ourselves of the slavery? Is it a night of Maror, or is it a night of Hetseba, when we're supposed to be leaning back? And that's really what the idea of the Matzah is, that the Matzah tells us that at the beginning, we are supposed to remember that that the same way it's Matzah, B'gnos, B'Messiah, B'Shvach, that we're supposed to remember that entire progression. We also remember the progression of remembering what happened in Mitzrayim, but simultaneously realizing that the Geula is brewing the whole time, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the plan. And Hashem was Chishev Es HaKeis. Before we even went down, Hashem knew how and when we're going to be taken out. And that's what the idea of the Matzah is that Hashem has the full plan in mind. Again, from our perspective, we only see the here and now. But even when we were eating the matzah of affliction, when we were sitting in the shibud, the end was, from Hashem's perspective, in sight. We couldn't see it yet. But the matzah represents the fact that both ideas, both the shibud and the geula, are really present at the same time. And we have to remember that that's the case. Maror, so at the end of Maggid, we mentioned that Rabbi Gamliel says, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu b'pesach lo yotzei idei chova. So a person has to mention three things at the Leil HaSeder in order to fulfill his chiyuv. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. So Maror is one of those fundamental three things that need to be mentioned. But it's a little strange. If I would have had to pick the order for Rabbi Gamliel to tell me how to perform this mitzvah, which are one of the three important things, I would have put Maror at the beginning. Maror represents the bitterness of the Shibud. It represents the bitterness of what was happening in Mitzrayim. Why Pesach Matzah and then Maror? Then Maror Pesach Matzah. Maror, I would have thought, should have been at the beginning. So the Maitanisim, the Nesivah, suggests that what it reflects is that the main part of the Geula was turning us into Ovdei Hashem. And even if everything had been good in Mitzrayim, again, sometimes we think of we have the perspective that the main purpose of the Geula was to remove the hardship of Mitzrayim, and to remove the terrible situation that we were in, to remove the affliction, and to put us into a better situation. But what Rabbi Gamliel is hinting to us is that no, even if there wouldn't have been a Maror, even if things would have been good for us in Mitzrayim physically, they would have treated us nicely, but because we were still Meshubad, we were the Avadim of Paro, because we were involved in that society, we weren't Ovdei Hashem yet, we didn't have the birth of Klal Yisrael yet, we would have been incomplete, and it would have been enough to celebrate a Pesach just for the purpose of having left Mitzrayim, even if we were treated well, just for the purpose of being turned into Ovdei Hashem. And that's why Maror is stuck on the end, because the main focus of the Haggadah is the Pesach and the Matzah, the fact that we left Mitzrayim to become Ovdei Hashem. Maror, so we also remember that there was an extra Tova, that it was an extra kindness of Hashem, that He removed the affliction that we had in the past. But if the Maror would have been first, then our perspective may have shifted. We may have thought that the main goal and the main thing that was accomplished through the Geula was removing the hardship, when it's not true. The main purpose of taking Klal Yisrael out was to turn us into Ovdei Hashem, to create this nation of Klal Yisrael with a unique relationship with Hashem. Then, after that, it's not just Pesach Matzah, we also remember Maror. We also remember the hardships that existed in Mitzrayim. The Rav Zichron Levracha had a different approach. And he said that the Haggadah tells us a story, referred to it as Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, but on the other hand, it's not a storybook. A storybook needs to be chronological. It has to go in the order of the events that took place. So, but when you're telling over the story, it doesn't necessarily have to take that approach. We can focus on the more essential parts. And at least from a halachic perspective, Pesach determines the nature of the other mitzvot. That only when the Korban Pesach exists can we fulfill the mitzvah of Maror on a d'oraisa, on a Torah level? Once the Korban Pesach doesn't exist, like it does today, so Maror drops down to being a mitzvah d'rabban, and it's only a rabbinic mitzvah. So Pesach sets the tone for the other mitzvahs. And even for the mitzvah of matzah, we do have a mitzvah of matzah, to eat matzah min ha-Torah. But Bizman Shabbat to make this time, when we would have had the Pesach, we would have fulfilled two mitzvahs. We would have fulfilled an extra mitzvah d'oraisa of eating the matzah together with the Pesach. So again, the Pesach influences the nature of the other mitzvahs hayom. So the Pesach is listed first. After that comes the matzah, which also has a kiyum d'oraisa. And after that finally comes the maror, which was knocked down to a d'rabbanan. After we eat the maror, so then we move to korech. So korech, we make a sandwich out of the maror together with the matzah and the charoset, and we say zechel mikdash kehillel, and we remember what Hillel did with Manjah based on mikdash hayakayim, that he would be korech, the pesach, the matzah, and the maror, and eat them all together to fulfill the pasuk of amatzos umerorim yochluhu. So there's one important halachic point, which is an interesting discussion, which is that the halacha is that one is not supposed to talk from after you make the bracha on the matzah until after korech. Since the bracha of the matzah, the alachilas matzah, goes not only on the initial eating of the matzah, but the bracha also goes on the eating that we're going to do in korech. So one is not supposed to talk until after finishing the korech. The question is, so what about Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel? When should you say Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel? So those who suggested that perhaps Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel, we normally say Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel before eating the Korech. So there are those who suggest, the Bir Halacha in the Mishnah Berurah talks about this and suggests perhaps that it would be more appropriate to say it afterwards. Again, we're just describing what's taking place, so we don't lose by saying it afterwards, but perhaps in terms of creating this, the hefsek from the bracha, it would be better to say it afterwards. But an interesting note within the paragraph of Zeichel HaMikdash Kehillel is the pasuk that's quoted, the Kayim Hashem Ramatos Umrorim Yochluhu, that pasuk is actually written by Pesach Sheni. Why would we incorporate the pasuk from Pesach Sheni instead of incorporating a similar pasuk from Pesach Rishon when we're dealing with the eating, the korech, which happens on the Pesach Rishon? So I saw a suggestion that the idea of the pes, normally when it comes to mitzvot, so there's a time that there's a prescribed time for the mitzvah, and if for whatever reason we were unable to perform the mitzvah during that time, we lost out. There's no way to make it up. And in that sense, Pesach Sheni is unique. And that Pesach Sheni is an opportunity for those who were unable to bring the Pesach Rishon, they were there for Chokah, they were Tamei, whatever the reason was, they were unable to bring the Pesach Rishon, so now they have an opportunity to offer the Pesach Sheni. How did it come about that there was a Pesach Sheni? So the impression that you get from the Pesukim was that it wasn't, on a certain level, part of the initial plan. It was they had to ask for it. It was Lama Nigara. They said, why should we lose out? We were Tamei, we were unable to do that. Maybe we were even involved in a Mace Mitzvah. We were supposed to be Metamei ourselves. Why should we lose out on the Mitzvah? And Hashem responds, and because they were adamant, they didn't want to lose out on the Mitzvah. The Mitzvah was so meaningful to them. Hashem actually provided for them an extra opportunity. And perhaps that's the message of in the Zeichel HaMikdash, of including the Pasuk from Pesach Sheni, it's the hope for the future. It's the realization that you're right. Right now came the Lel HaSeder. We're sitting here and we don't have a Korban Pesach to include in our Korech sandwich. But Lama Nigara, that's not a reason to give up. That's not a reason for us to assume that the Geula isn't coming, that we're not going to reach a time when there is an opportunity to eat the Korban Pesach together in this sandwich. And the message is that the same way that B'nai Yisrael, they were the ones that initiated, and they wanted the opportunity of Pesach Sheni. They said, Lama Nigara. So too, even when we're sitting on the Lel HaSeder and bemoaning the fact that we don't have the Korban Pesach, there's still the looking forward, the optimism of looking to the future, of us doing everything in our power to try and ensure that we'll reach the point where we too will have the ability to once again bring the Korban Pesach. So after Korach, he moved to Shulchan Orech, and it seems like that's just another Yom Tov meal. But what's interesting is that if it was just another Yom Tov meal, so I wouldn't have thought that when we're, you know, listing off and this list of Kadesh, Urchas, Karpas, etc., it's not a modern-day creation. It's the Rishonim already created this summary of the important aspects of the order of the Haggadah. And it seems to be that Shulchan Aruch is not just another Yom Tov meal, but it has to take part of being in the Leil HaSeder. And part of that is to remember how one eats, and that a Ben Choren has the ability to eat however he wishes. We're free, we can have as much food as we want, we can eat whenever we want, but that the Torah perspective is that even within the realm of Achila, even within the realm of when you have the ability to have as much as possible, it needs to be with the proper perspective. It needs to be put into the perspective of what's appropriate, even for a Ben Choren. And that it's an opportunity, even when it's a Yom Tov meal, to think that, you're right, I am free, and I can express the fact that we're free people and we have so much, Baruch Hashem, but at the same time, we have to remember that a Ben Choren has to eat in a certain way as well. Safon is really the focus of where the Haggadah is leading.
Why is that called Shulchan Aruch? Why isn't it called Achila?
Not sure.
Good question.
You can, on a certain level, you can ask that question on any of these things. Safon is also, which we're getting up to right now, so it comes from the language that the Afikoman is hidden, but I would have called it Afikoman. So you're right. Why they chose the certain language is interesting. I mean, it could just be that the table is set, and maybe that is the focus. The focus shouldn't be on the Afikoman. Maybe that's what you're getting at. But I'm not 100% sure. But then we looked at Safon, which is really the focus, which is the Achila Samata, which is a Zecher for the Korban Pesach. And it's actually, and from a halachic standpoint, that's very important, because we have to realize that when we're eating this meal, again, part of, I guess, the eating of the Ben Choren, is to eat in a way where we're going to leave enough space, enough room, to be able to eat the Afikoman. The Afikoman is the main part the goal of the Suda. We eat the Suda in order to be able to eat the Afikoman al Hasova. One of the halachos of the Korban Pesach was that it needs to be eaten al Hasova. It's the last thing which fills you up, which makes you satiated. And it's an interesting opportunity. Normally, when we're coming to remember Korbanos and we're trying to do whatever we can without a Beis HaMikdash to participate and to relive the Korbanos, the only way that we have to do it is to daven or to learn. We can learn the halachas of the Korban, we can daven the appropriate passages that have to do with the Korban, but we never get another opportunity to actually do an action which represents the Korban. The Afikoman is an achila. We're actually eating something. And the fact that we had this opportunity to actually mimic a korban to the point of actually being able to eat something that represents the korban is one that needs to be taken advantage of, and that's why so many of the halachos we try to parallel the halachos of the Korban Pesach, because this really is a unique opportunity. Barech, benching also is a little bit commonplace, so it's hard to elaborate too much. But Barech does represent the point of transition, where now we're going to be moving to the last two cups of the evening, and the second half of the Seder. And the second half of the Seder, as we'll elaborate on in the last few minutes, is really, the goal is to internalize everything that we've experienced in the first half of the Seder. And perhaps the fact that also that benching is included in the order of events for the evening is an opportunity to focus a little bit more on what benching is about generally, being that it's part of the general framework of the Leil HaSeder. So just to make one point, it's interesting that when we say Hazanas Olam Kulo V'Tzivo Bechein B'Chesed of Rachamim, before we even point out the Chesed and the Rachamim and Hashem providing us with food, we comment on the Chein. just the beauty, the grace. It seems a little strange. That's the first comment that we have in when we're thanking Hashem for the food. So if you think about it, just imagine what the world would be like if everything was black and white, if all foods had the same taste, if all foods had the same texture, and if we realize the tremendous what Hashem did for us by providing different colors, different textures, different flavors in the food. It changes the entire culinary experience, and it really is a tremendous chesed that Hashem did for us. And to highlight that, we even put it before the chesed and the rachamim. In Hallel, so Hallel, unfortunately, we're getting towards the end of the Seder, so usually at this point we're starting to get a little bit tired, and the Yetzer Hara is trying to get us to hurry up and start cleaning up and getting into bed. But Hallel really is the focus of what the Seder is all about. And it's a milestone, because the Hallel is the opportunity to take everything that we've gained from the Seder, to take the Amunah, to take the lessons of the Seder, and then to sing out and to thank Hashem for all these miracles. We've been discussing it, we've been elaborating on it, and we've been internalizing it, but we didn't get to the point of actually singing Shira, of actually thanking Hashem for these tremendous nisim that took place. And then, as we mentioned earlier, perhaps even the main kiyum, the main fulfillment of the mitzvot of the Leil HaSeder, is the kiyum shebelev. It's what we feel inside. And this is the opportunity that we have to express and to sing to Hashem for all of the thanks that He, for all of the miracles that He provided and provides for us. So what's the role of Nirtza? Hallel seems to really be the culmination of the Seder. And it's the climax, and that's what we were really leading towards, is singing these praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So basically, in Nirtza, we summarize it in the first paragraph in the Chasal Seder Pesach Kilchoso. We recognize that we did everything the way we were supposed to. And we're asking Hashem to accept from the same shorish of Nirtza that we have in the Torah so often when it comes to the Korbanos. We're asking Hashem that everything that we've done, and we've gone through the entire process, it should all be accepted in front of Hashem. And the same way that the Korban Pesach, which is a Korban, is accepted as a Korban, so too our Avodah, which we did instead of the Korban Pesach, and we did up until this point, should be accepted as a Korban in front of Hashem. But what are all these piyutim, which some of them are just very difficult to understand, but what do they have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? Most of them have nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Certainly the more popular ones have nothing to do with Mitzrayim. Echad Miyodeya, Chagayam, most people have nothing, no idea what it has to do with at all. Ad Yirhu, what do these piyutim have to do with anything? So perhaps the perspective is, and Pinkus has a similar idea, which is that we've gone through this entire process, and the goal has been to establish Klal Yisrael anew, to relive the experience of the creation of Klal Yisrael. And once we've been able to get through that, once we've been able to internalize everything that we've been trying to accomplish throughout the Seder, so now we have a new perspective on the entire world. We don't have to look at Yetzias Mitzrayim anymore. Now we can go back to the basics. We can just discuss the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Ad Yirhu, of focusing on Bachar Gadol Hu, all the aspects, all of the midos of Hashem. We can go back to Echad Miyodea, to the basics of the world, the way Hashem created the world, all the things that Hashem put into the world, and Chag Adiyah, which we're not going to elaborate on now, which basically, according to most of Pesachim, has to do with the history of Klal Yisrael. It has to do with the different Golios, the different events that have taken place in Klal Yisrael. And with this new perspective of realizing what it means to be the nation of Klal Yisrael, what it means to be the nation that was chosen, that was taken out of Mitzrayim by Hashem, to have this special relationship, we now can have a new perspective, and with this we can move forward and hope that the lessons of Pesach will be ones not just for the Leil HaSeder, but that will influence the entire year and years to come.
Thank you.